A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you, Robert?
I'm good. I'm feeling like a global citizen today.
Why?
Because the crisis that we are currently facing is a global one. And I'm really excited to speak to today's guest because he not only has helped raise a lot of money in the past week from an amazing living room concert, which is helping for the COVID-19 health workers, but also he's someone who literally has probably travelled to more cities than all of us. And he is known all over the world for his incredible music. But the reason we really wanted to speak with him was because of his thirst for knowledge and his incredible passion that he has for art, and not just contemporary art, actually like all kinds of art and photography and paintings and lots of different artworks. So we are thrilled to welcome to Talk Art all the way from Los Angeles.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to Talk Art, Mr. Elton John.
Hi guys, how are you?
Hi, Elton. Good. I know you're a Sir Elton John, but I wanted to do that because...
I don't like being called Sir, so you just call me Elton, please.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I was going to say, that's my go-to karaoke song when they have the George Michael on you version, so I wanted to say that introduction for you. How do we find you, Elton? How are you at the moment?
We're very well. We're in the house in LA with the kids, Zachary and Elijah, David and I. We're hunkered down here. We're doing as we're told. We're not going too stir-crazy, actually, because... it's kind of nice to spend this much time with our children because I don't get to see them 24/7 very often. And so we're actually kind of enjoying our time with them, but also really worried about what's going on around the world. And every day I look at the news, everything seems to be a little worse. So it's not a very pleasant time for people to be living in at all. In fact, it's awful. And I've obviously never known anything like this in my lifetime. And so there's no parallel that one can compare it to. We're very happy where we are. We're very fortunate to be where we are. But for most people, it's a nightmare.
Do you think it's important at a time like this for people to delve more into culture and reading and film, but like art? Do you think art can serve as kind of like a beacon of light during this period?
Well, it can, but you see, you can't go to a museum, or you can't go to a gallery, or you can't go to, you can't really go out and see art. So you have to look at it online. But I think art encompasses so much. I mean, we've been catching up on movies, television series, things that I can't watch normally because I'm always on the road. So it's given me a chance to play catch up with some wonderful pieces of art that have been on television and in cinema. So, you know, art encompasses everything. The visual arts, are kind of close to people at the moment, but they can, there's lots of programs about artists and David Hockney's making new art on his laptop. And,
this is the time.
So people are in this kind of time. I'm not writing any songs, so they don't feel like it, and I don't have a piano here. But I think people will use this time to be very, very creative. And I think after this is all over and done with, God knows when, I think you'll see a surge of creativity from the visual arts, from the oral arts, from people who are writing, people who are composing, people who are taking photographs, people who are painting. So I think it's going to lead to an outburst of creative energy because people have nothing else to do at the moment apart from look after their loved ones.
A virus renaissance in art, as it were.
Kind of. Let's hope. I've never been through anything like this, and none of us have. You're not going to see a renaissance of stuff from me, but I'm just enjoying being with my children. So, but I think you will see a lot of stuff coming out, a lot of written stuff, A lot of, you know, I collect a lot of journalistic photography, for example, mm-hmm. that's, you know, everyday photography that's in the news. So, you know, we're keeping our eye on the ball and looking at photographs from the coronavirus because it's such an incredible moment in time. So,
Yeah, totally.
One of my favorite photographs. Well, there was a great photograph in The Guardian the other day of all these goats that went into Llandudno, and it was extremely funny. And it was extremely eerie, but it made me laugh. And it's a great image of all these goats that came down from the mountainside. And now there's a picture in today's paper of all these deer, that are settling on people's lawns in somewhere in London. And it's kind of beautiful in a way that, you know, the wildlife come down and, you know, mingle with the humans because there's no human left.
Yeah, well, in Venice, definitely. They've got the dolphins coming in the canals in Venice at the moment, and swans.
Well, that's
which
not true. I was duped about that, and that was called fake news from me.
I thought
I was duped about that. But the canals in Venice are much clearer. You can see through them. Mm-hmm. You know, the skies are clearer. The spring is lusher. So you know, there are bonuses to this, but they're very small bonuses when you compare the loss of human lives and the suffering that people are going to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Now, that's really interesting, Elton, because I've always seen you in the way that you've collected art and photography as a kind of archivist and a beacon of light in that sense, because I think archiving and protecting culture is such a rare thing. And you've luckily, you know, been one of these people who's had great fortune yourself through your career, but you've actually invested a lot of that success back into archiving art. Like, I know you have photographs from like September the 11th and then also a huge photography collection. Is that something that you've always had within you, wanting to sort of take care of art?
I think I've always been a collector ever since I was a kid. I collected dinky toys, I collected books, records, and it's part of my addiction is to collect. And it's the nicest addiction I've ever had, because all the others have led me down the wrong path. But collecting has led me to be educated. It's educated me on so much. Reading as a kid was so important to me. Listening to music was so important to me. And I've always kept my things in pristine condition. I've also got rid of them. You know, in 1989, I sold everything I had apart from three or four paintings because I'd over-collected, and I didn't have room for anything, and I just had to get rid of everything. There was no thinning out process. I just said, right, everything's going more or less. And about 6 months later, I was sober. So I must have had an insight to what was going to go on in my life. But I've always collected since I was a kid. And when I first started, writing songs with Bernie, and we were sharing a room together at my mother's and stepfather's apartment in Northwood Hills, we used to go to Athena Productions on Oxford Street and buy these cheap reproduction prints of Man Ray and things and put them in our room because they were so great. We couldn't, obviously, no way could afford the real thing, but art was always available. And we used to go to galleries and we used to go to museums. But it was nice to have a nice Man Ray reproduction on your wall to wake up to in the morning.
And then in 1993, you actually acquired that Man Ray work at auction.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I didn't. That was a painting of the lips. But when I started collecting photography, it was 1991. Before I got sober, I collected Art Nouveau and Art Deco, which I started collecting avidly when I was from 1971 onwards. And I started collecting posters, French posters by Bertrand and Toulouse-Lautrec. And I loved that era. And I started collecting Tiffany lamps, Galet lamps, a dome, all sorts of Majorelle furniture, and then went into Art Deco. And my house was just full of lamps on the floor. There was just no room for them all. And I loved that period. And it's so odd that when I got sober, I saw things in different light, and I really didn't like that kind of art anymore. I can appreciate it, but it's not what I want to collect anymore. But I learned, and I educated myself by collecting. As I say, posters to start with because I couldn't afford anything else, and then it graduated to the real thing. And, you know, art helped educate me, and it broadened my eyes. And visually, when you're surrounded by something that's really beautiful, no matter if it's a £5 reproduction or the real thing, you get up in the morning and you look at it, it subconsciously it makes you feel good and it inspires you. And I've always been lucky enough to do that. And I've always liked having nice things around me, whether they cost 10,000 quid or five quid. It doesn't matter. If you love them and they inspire you, then that's it. It helps my process of being a kind of creative person, a creative writer.
I'm talking about being surrounded by art. In the house you're in now, do you have different collections or different? Do you kind of focus on certain collections of your art at different houses?
Most of our houses are contemporary. Most of the houses we live in are contemporary, or the apartments that we live in. We have a four-bedroom house here in LA, which is, you know, it's all on one level, which is great because, you know, you hear the, it's quite compact. It's not a big house by any means, but it's very light, and because it's California, the walls are white, and most of the art on the walls is either painting or contemporary photography. And we usually decorate the houses, and the art goes in first. It's very important. If we're redecorating, we put the art on the wall first on a computer and then build the furniture and stuff around it.
Wow. And you do this with your full-time curator, Newell Harding, is that
Newell
his name?
Newell Harding, yeah.
And
when you have a
photography
collection that over 8,000 photographs, you have to have someone to look after it and know what you've got because, you know, you buy things and you forget. And so it's always great when I go to Atlanta and I go down into Newell's office. It's I just stare at the computer images of what I've bought over the years, and I forget because I'm an avaricious collector. I really do. And you know, as I said at the start of the program, photojournalism is something that I've really latched onto because nobody really collects that much anymore. And you have to really be like a magpie. You have to glean the newspapers and websites to get the photography that you want, and then you have to contact the photographers. And most of these photographers that are in the war zones or, you know, doing things every day in dangerous situations, they don't often have a lot of time to print photographs, and so you may have to wait a couple of years for a photograph. For example, there was a wonderful, disturbing image of a boy in Syria in a little orange sweater. He was sitting, and his face was all covered in blood and soot and whatever. And we eventually got it, but it had to be, it was taken by a Syrian photographer, and it took us 2 years to get it, but it was worth the wait. And it was printed in Syria, and we thought, oh, what's it going to be like, the quality of it? But it's actually brilliant. And so sometimes you have to be prepared to wait for these images that you want, that are important images to have if you're collecting a history of what's going on in the world. And I've been doing that for the last 30 years, basically.
Well, the photographer must have been incredibly excited to know that Elton John was trying to buy one of his images, right?
They are quite excited. And then some of them, you know, they say, oh, we don't want any money, but if you're playing in Rome or somewhere, can we have four tickets to the show? So it's a bargaining chip.
Yeah. That's an art swap. That's an official art swap.
But it's an art swap. And I love meeting these guys because, you know, their images are incredible. I mean, I have a great admiration for photographers anyway. And it's an art form that I never, ever recognized until I got sober. And I'd had my photograph taken by so many wonderful photographers, and I'd never considered photography as an art form.
What changed then? How did it change?
I went to my friend Alain Perrin, who was the head of Cartier. His wife and he collected photography. And they had a festival in Cahors, in France, where they showed photographs on buildings and inside buildings. And I stayed at his house, and there, also staying at the house, was the photographer Herb Ritz and his agent, his photography agent, who had a gallery in Los Angeles called David Fahey, a part of the Fahey Klein Gallery. And they were showing photographs to Alain, and they were Herb Ritz photographs, Horst photographs, and Irving Penn, basically fashion photographs. They were black and white, beautiful images. And I just thought, oh, my God, these are so beautiful. I'd never seen anything like this. So I bought about 12 on the spot, and that was it. And then I became very big friends with David Fahey in L.A. He's a lovely man. And I got an apartment in Atlanta, and I started hanging photography. And I became friendly with a woman called Jane Jackson, who had the only photographic gallery in Atlanta. She gave me books. I started reading. I started collecting at an avaricious pace. And it all blossomed from going to Alain Perrin's house. And I always blame Alain for my addiction to photography. But I'm also thankful to him because it opened my eyes to another art form. And, you know, I never had any contemporary paintings until I got sober. I'd only collected kind of 50s, 60s paintings and kind of old master paintings. And I still love old master paintings. But, you know, I got rid of most of my paintings except for a Bacon, two Magrittes, and a Patrick Proctor in 1989. And I kept those. And I don't have those anymore because I passed them on as well.
Do you have any regrets about the painting? Do you ever wake up in the middle of the night thinking, oh, I wish I hadn't sold that one or moved that one on?
No, because I'd had these paintings in my house for so long. I got an enjoyment out of them that, you know, I could never, ever imagine. And sometimes you have to say, let someone else enjoy it. Let someone else have it. And I wanted to finance my photography collection by selling some of these paintings and collect different things. And that's how I've been throughout my life. I've changed and collected different things. I'm a huge lover of glass, and it stems from Galley and Tiffany and Dome, and also, of course, Lalique. And I collected that at the time I was collecting Art Nouveau and Art Deco, and I sold that. But now I collect contemporary glass, and I think I have about 3,000 pieces in my apartment in Atlanta.
That you live with or in storage?
I've always loved glass. Glass is a very underrated art form. And I'm a huge lover of Dale Chihuly, William Morris, Richard Jolly. There are some incredible glass artists out there. And, you know, so I've become involved in that as well. So the spectrum that I've collected is pretty wide. I don't think there's anything I haven't collected apart from Impressionist paintings, which I can't afford them. And I don't, it's not my favorite kind of art. Pre-Raphaelite, which again, I can't afford them. Well, I could, but again, it's not my favorite form of art. But I'm not a snob. If people love what they love, then they collect it. And I've just changed now. We collect contemporary art, old antiquities, kind of old master paintings, and photography and glass.
I would say you need a gallery, but you've actually had a photography gallery in your name and David's name at the V&A Museum, right? There's a whole wing
there. Yes, we've just financed that, and you know, it's something I want to do when I come off the road, and who knows when that will be now, thanks to coronavirus. But when I want to create shows, curate shows there with some of my photography, and it's something I'm passionate about. And it's, you know, this was planning for when I come off the road and I've got more time to devote to our art itself. I mean, we had the exhibition at the Tate Gallery about 2 years ago.
How was that for you?
It was incredible. Amazing show.
Because I think people had an idea that we collected, or I collected things, but they didn't have an idea of the quality of the things that we collected. And, you know, the reviews we got were none less than 5 stars. It was a beautiful collection of things from 1920 to 1950, all vintage photographs that I've lovingly collected over the years. And I was just blown away because they were hung in a different way than I would hang them. I hang myself very salon style in Atlanta, and these were in different rooms with more spaces between them. And it got my appreciation of the images that I lent grew even more because I saw them in a different light. And when I'm in Atlanta, I get up every day and see this stuff. But, you know, when I collect, I'm a fervent collector. I don't go, you know, I'm not a half measures person in anything I do, as you well know. When I saw them at the Tate and they were rehung, it was a beautiful show. I was so proud of it. And people, I think, were genuinely shocked that the collection was so beautifully collected and I was so the highest quality. I don't collect anything I collect as far as photography goes has to be inspected first because a lot of photographs get damaged by the sun and, you know, people don't look after them. So before I fire a photograph, it's taken out of the frame, it's examined, and it's put back. If it's in great condition, I will consider buying it. If it's not, like at auction, you don't know what you're buying. So if you buy at auction, you send your curator there, you pick the things you want to have a look at, she takes them out of the frame, she examines them, and then if she says yay or nay, then we bid on them. And sometimes if you want an image, you have to be incredibly patient to get it.
You turned down one of your favorite Diane Arbus, is that what you're going to say? You turned down that one because
Diane Arbus that I've wanted for a long time. It's the boy with the hand grenade in Central Park. The toy hand grenade.
One of Russell's favorites.
Yes,
and,
it's me.
So I wanted that for about 20 years, and it came up at auction about 10 years ago in New York. Newell went up to look at it, it had coffee stains all over it, but it still sold for $500,000. Now, I would never pay $50 for a damaged thing. It's got to be in perfect condition. And toward the end of last year, I was offered two images of this that had come from private homes, and I finally got the one that I wanted. So it took me a long time, 20 years, to find this photograph, and it's finally now, we have it. And it's
amazing. And that's in Atlanta, is it? Is that in your house there?
It's in Atlanta, yeah.
Wow. And when you took all these works out of Atlanta for the Tate, did you just have empty spaces all in your house? Was it quite like disconcerting?
No, we just filled them up with other ones.
Well, I heard you had to actually extend the apartment, didn't you?
Yeah, well, it was great to see other pictures on the wall instead of the things we had. But, that's the lucky thing about being an ardent collector. You know, when I started collecting photography, it was quite cheap to buy. I lucked out, you know. It wasn't a fashionable thing to collect. And there was no photography gallery in London, a museum. And most European capitals and cities have a great photography museum. England was a long way behind. We had the National Archive in Bradford, and the Victoria and Albert had an archive. But as far as contemporary photography goes, we lagged behind. And I think people in England didn't take photography seriously as an art form. But I can remember Andres Serrano having a show of Pierce Christ in London, which sold out, and records people of Mapplethorpe shows. And the first photography was there, but we were a long way behind in getting it up to speed, a bit like coronavirus as well.
Yes, yeah. We are.
In your Tate show, I was so blown away by one work in particular, which has stuck with me ever since, which is The Underwater Swimmer from 1917.
The Andre Patek, that was the...
Yes.
Yeah. That was a proof, that was the original proof that he had, and it was sold to me by someone in New York who said, I've got this image. And I already had a modern print of it, a much larger print of it, but this was the proof of it. And I snapped it up straight away because for me, people always ask me, what's the most influential photograph? And you think, God, that's such a hard question. Mm-hmm. But that photograph, 1917, could have been taken yesterday and you would have blinked an eye. And it obviously influenced so much as far as photography styles go, and also people like Hockney when he did the bigger flash and things like that. So I picked that image because I thought that has come up to from that 1917 date when it was first taken to the modern day. It has never dated, and it's influenced so much art, photography, paintings, and so that's the image I chose. But it is an amazing image. It's incredible. And it's his brother. It's Andre Conserje's brother, who we took a lot of photographs of during his lifetime. Amazing. And it's his brother. And it's just, you can't believe it was taken in 1917. It's so modern, so abstract. Mm.
It's such a jewel of a work as well. There's something so tiny about it and so huge at the same time, because the kind of idea it gives you when you look at it, and the expanse of nature and all of those things, it's just, and the way the light is shining through the water, I think it's a really, really special artwork. It's one of the greatest, really.
Well, sometimes small is better. I have a lot of tiny photographs, and I find them enchanting, because some of them, there's Paul Strand photographs, Conserje photographs that speak to you. I mean, they're tiny. And then you buy the modern print, and it still looks great, but I love small photographs, tiny images, because the detail in them, it's like buying an old mosaic, like buying an old Italian mosaic, and looking at it, and it's just, how the hell did that image become so beautiful? And it's just so small, but the detail in it is incredible. So it's a bit like doing a mosaic from the 16th, 17th century. It's extraordinary. Wow. And of course, now with contemporary photography, the images are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And I love that too. But when it comes to old black and white images, some of the small ones are incredible. I mean, there's a Dutch photographer, Hagemeyer, who did lovely, beautiful small images. Tina Madotti, I have pictures of her, of Walker Evans, Edward Weston, her lover. And they're jewel boxes. They're right. They're like little jewel boxes.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend.
But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, this is Russell Tovey and Robert Diamond from Talk Art, the arts podcast, and we're here today with Budweiser beer, and we're going to be talking about something very, very important to both of us, aren't we, Rob?
That's right. Budweiser, the king of beers, has joined forces with legendary artist Sir Peter Blake, the godfather of British pop art and someone that both of us have adored since we were kids.
I've loved pop art since I was a kid, and Sir Peter Blake has been a constant for me, alongside other pop art artists, the Americans like Andy Warhol, Roy Lichtenstein, Keith Haring. And I got into pop art, Rob, because I loved cartoons growing up. I mean, I still love animation. But suddenly I discovered that so many artists were referencing comic strips and cartoons in their artworks, and I could go and see them in museums, and I suddenly didn't need to grow up. And Sir Peter Blake was one of these artists that meant so much to me. And I think people, if they don't know the name Sir Peter Blake, you would certainly know his work. The album cover for The Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club, Oasis's Stop the Clocks. These are iconic art historical moments that this artist has actually been at the forefront of.
And you've met him, haven't you?
I've met him, yeah, at the South Bank Show Awards years ago. I was there for the History Boys, and he was there, and I got incredibly excited and met him. But you've not met him before, have you, Rob?
I have. I've actually even been to his house and hung out with him and his wife, and I got to make an amazing print with him, which was a huge privilege, actually. It was a real career moment for me. So Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake have come together to unite, and they have created an exclusive limited edition beer can, which doubles as a collectible piece of pop art.
And it was on display at London's Truerman Brewery on the 23rd and 24th of March this year, if you were lucky enough to get there. And also, were you one of the lucky few that were able to get one of the signed beer cans by Sir Peter Blake himself? And there was something very special there, wasn't there, Rob? What was that?
They've actually made the first ever fridge frame, which kind of is reminiscent of what we would be, you know, accustomed with in terms of a museum exhibit. Yeah. But this fridge frame is designed to display the limited edition can of beer as a work of art, but also keeps the beer cool.
Okay, I need a fridge full of fridge frames because this sounds incredible. So Peter Blake's work adorns the cans with all of his eye-catching simplicity. It features the Budweiser's iconic red bow tie logo, but it's encompassed by the artist's signature and his use of block colours and icons. They unveiled this artistic can in all of its glory in one of these fridge frames, as Rob said, which is very exciting. The limited edition cans are available to purchase as a four-pack for a limited time only in selected Tesco stores nationwide.
Budweiser and Sir Peter Blake, thank you for bringing us this cultural moment. I love it when art reaches new audiences, and I really feel like this is going to go into everyone's homes, and is really joyous. So head over to Tesco, pick up a four-pack. Thank you, Budweiser.
But also, if you want to get this collectible piece of art at home, Budweiser also giving people the chance to own their very own exclusive fridge frame. Beer and art lovers can register their interest by visiting www.budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. That's budweiser.co.uk/Sir Peter Blake collab. Budweiser and Talk Art with Sir Peter Blake. So collecting contemporary.
And who are some of the contemporary? Yeah, exactly.
Contemporary photographers I love, obviously. Andreas Gursky is the most famous photographer in the world, or the most expensive contemporary photographer in the world, who, you know, took a chance on doing this kind of photography, which was so big at the time. And there's so many great contemporary photographers. Candida Hofer.
I heard that you like Alex Prager.
Alex Prager, which is a young photographer.
Wolfgang Tillmann, you collect, don't you?
And Thomas Ruth, Kathy Opie.
Yes.
There are so many great contemporary photographers that I absolutely love. Matthew Brandt is a young photographer that I collect.
Yes.
So my tastes have gone. When I first started collecting photography, I was a black and white snob, and and then I suddenly got into contemporary photography, and then that bit me. And the photography now, the collection covers everything except maybe Victorian photography. It starts at about 1920, and I know a lot of people who love Victorian photography, and I understand why. And I bought the Man Ray photographs from someone in a private collection of a neck, and it looks, I think it's Duchamp's neck, but it looks like a penis, actually, if you pardon the expression. But it's
lovely.
A beautiful photograph. It was in the Tate show, and the guy sold it to me and said, I'm not interested in this photography. I just want to buy 19th century photography of trees. And that's what collectors are all about. They're all nuts. And so that's what he wanted. And so that's what he started to collect.
Wow. And now, so where's you're collecting contemporary, is it important for you to meet the artists or have like artists as friends? And do you like to hang out
that.
With them?
I love
you do.
Yes. There's an artist that I love, a painter called Nathaniel Mary Quinn.
Mm-hmm,
that if you
yes.
go and read his... if you go on Wikipedia and read his story, it's astonishing. And I bought a painting by him in Los Angeles a few years ago, and I read his story and I got in touch with him. I had lunch with him at the house, and I watched him grow as an artist in stature. And he was originally represented by the M&B Gallery, which is a wonderful little gallery in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
which seems to find young artists before they're snapped up by Larry Gagosian. And now Nathaniel Mary Quinn is represented by by Gagosian. His prices are going up. He's a wonderful painter. So it was important for me to meet him. And just because his story, and I'm not going to tell you his story, for anybody listening, I told Edwin Enenthal his story, the editor of Vogue in Britain.
Yeah.
And he read up about him, and they've become really good friends. It's an astonishing story. And you think, God, what an amazing life you've led. And it's led to you doing... It's beyond courageous, his story, and it's fantastic. So meeting him was really, really important. And I like to meet photographers. I love Kathy Opie. We've met many times. It's important to meet photographers. I had my photograph taken by Irving Penn, Lucas Samaras, who's an amazing photographer, who just basically takes photographs of himself, and Polaroids, a lot of Polaroids of him jacking off and stuff like that. It's really wonderful to meet artists because, I'm in awe of them. And Chuck Close is another one I can think of. Julian Schnabel. It's a different medium what they're doing. I just love it. I'm in awe of meeting a visual artist because I can't draw. I've never been able to draw or paint or make anything with my hands. The only thing I do well with my hands is play the piano and masturbate. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Massage? Can you do massage? I bet you've got
strong
arms.
You're well acquainted with Russell. You know, playing the piano. And,
did you ever meet Robert Mapplethorpe? Did you ever hang out with him?
I didn't. I was due to have my photograph taken with him 2 weeks before he died, and he was in such bad shape. I didn't. But I had my picture taken by Irving Penn.
Richard Avedon,
taken by Norman Parkinson.
Uh-huh.
I've been very lucky when it comes to having my picture taken by great people. And
I love the Irving Penn ones. They're so charismatic. And I heard you describe yourself as an insane Alan Bennett in them.
I look like Alan Bennett. And of course, he was doing it with a camera that moves slowly. I mean, just contort your face a little, move your head. And they were the result, and I love them. They're hanging in Atlanta, and I always loved those photographs. And, the time just flew. We spent about 2 hours just talking about him and his wife because his wife was his muse, as was Norman Parkinson's wife, and their love story was so touching. And his photographs, he made love to his wife with his camera as well as physically, and so did Norman Parkinson.
Right.
And I find those kind of stories really, really touching and beautiful.
Do your kids love your art? Like, they must be so well cultured now with everything that they're surrounded by on a daily basis.
They're kids. They're more interested in the Nintendo and things like that. they do love art, and they do love art. We took them to the Uffizi in Florence last year, and
what is that place, Elwin?
The Uffizi is one of the largest, most beautiful art galleries in the world, and it's in Florence, and it contains some of the Mole's best paintings. And I hurt my ankle, so it was a great advantage because they pushed me around in a wheelchair, and it's in a huge gallery, so I would never have been able to limp around it. And so the boys were with us, and they know about art at school, so that when we got to a Caravaggio painting of a Medusa, they know all about the Medusa and Caravaggio, so they know more than they let on. And then we saw the Botticellis, and it was just a wonderful experience, and they lapped it all up. They love culture, they love art, but they don't go on about it. They, you know, they're 7 and 9, so they're not. Yeah. They're interested in riding their scooters and doing stuff like that.
Do you have a favourite work of art in your collection? Do you have like one defining piece? I know you have like.
I don't. And people say if there was one photograph in Atlanta that you would save, if there was a fire and you had to run out the front door, what would it be? And I'd say it was the picture of David, my husband, as a young child, by my bed. That would be the one I would take.
I really love your photograph by Dorothea Lange, the migrant mother from the Great Depression. Yeah.
Well, she was one of the great photographers during that time with Walker Evans.
Yeah, such an amazing.
Yeah, those photographs break your heart. And there's one of the damaged child. And she wrote on the back, the damage has already been done of the photograph.
Right.
And it's just,
right.
You know, to be able to take photographs that speak to you from that time and still sound so alive. Walker Evans did the same thing as well. They're amazing photographs. Dorothea Lange has a new show out, and I think it's at MoMA, and it's absolutely. I just got the catalog the other day. She was a phenomenal photographer, and you know, I just think for me, and I'm gonna get shot down by a lot of people, but a portrait on a camera is so much better than a portrait on a canvas.
Right.
That's
okay.
What I feel.
I've never seen
apart from there's some great portraits, obviously, and Lucian Freud's self-portrait is one of my favorite paintings of all time.
Yes.
But I genuinely think the camera catches people's personality far more than a painting.
Wow. Mm. Well, one of our dream talk art guests is David Hockney, and you two are friends, right?
Yes, we met many times, and we had dinner together, and now he's living in Normandy.
That's right. Do you collect work by him?
I have. I'm lucky enough to have lovely painting by him. I have several of his collage photographs as well. He did Polaroids of collage Polaroids, which
I love those.
By the way, that Lucas Samaras did them first, and then David Hockney did them, and they're cut up, and he makes them all into one image. Yes, I do, and I admire him because I admire his penchant for keep going and still. You know, he still loves what he does. It's like being B.B. King, all those are great blues musicians. They died, they played till they died because they loved what they did. They didn't know anything else, and they loved to be creative. And I admire people that do that. Artists don't stop. Artists, true great artists, don't stop producing work. Picasso never stopped. You know, Cy Twombly never stopped. These kind of people, there's still people like Elliot Erwitt who's still taking photographs, and he's just amazing. He's 90 years of age, for Christ's sake, nearly.
What's David Hockney like to you? What is he like as a person?
Funny, really funny, and you know, dead blunt, honest. If he's got an opinion, he will give it to you. And I love people like that. You know, they're the kind of people you want to be around because they're fascinating. You don't talk much; you just listen. But he's very funny, and I've had dinner with him at Greg Gorman, who's a lovely friend of mine in LA. We've had dinner at his house 2 or 3 times, and I enjoy his company because I admire him. I admire his tenacity, his love of work, his the way he changed from painting to photographs and then back to painting again, then on a laptop. And he's always doing something, and I so admire it, whether you like it or not. And that's, you know, the thing about art is it's all subjective. It's, you know, some people like some things, some people don't. But the thing about a true artist is that he will never stop painting and still never stop taking photographs. That's their passion, and they shouldn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's actually very much like yourself, because I feel like you're always on to the next thing. Like, I feel like you're not necessarily an artist that would look back that much. I feel like you're always moving forward, which is such a great
I'm not sentimental. I'm not someone who craves the past. I very rarely listen to anything I do. It's all about what's next. And it's all about discovering something new, whether it's a young musician, a young photographer, a young filmmaker, a young actor. There's always something that's going to boggle your mind and think, Christ, you know, it's like, how does Billie Eilish make records like that when she's 16? How did Lord do it? These people are inspirational. And I find that if you get caught and you don't listen and you don't look, I'm always reading, you know, the good newspapers for the culture section to make sure I know what good film to watch, what good a TV series, a young artist, a young photographer. It's essential for me to do that because there's so much stuff out there. And as I say, I think after this awful thing has gone, there will be an outburst of creativity.
100%.
And if you were to look back in your career, you've actually worked with a lot of artists for actual like album sleeves. Is there one that or two that kind of stick out from your memory as being a great collaboration?
I think Alan Aldridge, when the Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dog Cowboy,
was
one of my favorite album sleeves, and he was a genius. And I love working with Alan. And in fact, my live show right now has a lot of his imagery in one of the songs. We've animated some of his imagery in someone saved my life tonight. So it's there's been David LaChapelle is also a huge influence on me, and is featured greatly in the show. Mary Ellen Mark was featured in my show. She's a wonderful photographer who unfortunately is now deceased. But when I played in Las Vegas, we used all her photographs. Martin Parr is one of my favorite contemporary photographers.
Yes,
we love
him. Martin Parr. His photographs go all the way. I guess that's why they call it the blues. And it's great to be able to work with photographers like that. It's important to have the visual people collaborate with me or use their work. Martin Parr, it's just, I've always loved his work. It's so British. It reminds me of my childhood. It reminds me, during these images of people on holiday during, I guess that's why they call it the blues, no one's talking to each other. And this is the day, this is the era before, you know, portable phones. Everyone looks miserable.
Yes.
And it's just, I remember those just sitting in the deck chair thinking, what's going to happen next? I'm bored. But it's lovely working with creative people like that. It's really, really, you know, it's fantastic. What can I say? Yeah. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to work with someone whose visual aspirations are so amazing. I would never have those. You know, I'm an audio person, but I love to look at visual things, but I have no idea how to make visual things. So for me, it's a treat. You know, it's a complete pleasure.
Can you tell us about the time you ignored Andy Warhol?
Yeah, it's in my book. It's like John Lennon and I were coked out of our heads in a hotel in New York. He knocked on the door about 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know, we were so paranoid about who it was. And it took me about 10 minutes to walk over to the peephole, and I turned around to John Lennon. I said, "A mouse, Andy Warhol," and he said, "Don't let him in. He's got a camera," because Andy always took a camera everywhere. So the last thing I wanted was a photograph of me high as a kite. So we ignored him. I met Andy two or three times. I didn't know him. I love his work, obviously, and I've got a lot of his Polaroids. And stitched photographs, which he's got. I've got one of me that he did, a stitched photograph, which is four images of me at Madison Square Garden. So, I thought he was a little weird, so I didn't really want to, you know, hang out with him.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Well, we ask every guest that comes on, Elton, two questions. The first one is, if you could do an art heist, if you could do an imaginary art heist, you could have any work of art in the world, whatever it is, you could have that to yourself at home, what would it be and why?
It would be Botticelli Primavera.
Where is that just currently hanging?
It's in the Uffizi in Florence.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very big painting. It's opposite the woman, the other one of the woman in the shell, Venus. And the Botticelli spring for Primavera, which is spring, is just astounding. I could look at it for about 2 hours nonstop. It's just, it's incredible. Just so beautiful. So beautiful. Now that would be my choice.
Amazing.
Wonderful. And when did you first see that one?
I saw it years ago at UFIT. They rehung it. And when we went last year, there's the two great Botticellis right next to each other. It takes your breath away how beautiful it is. It's just astonishing. Yeah.
Wow.
So the other question we ask is, what is your favourite colour?
Oh, God. That's a really weird one. I would say blue.
Mm-hmm.
Why blue?
I don't know. I love navy blue. I just like blue. I like the colour blue. But then I like red. But my instinct would be to say blue. Not brown.
That's a good one. Not brown.
Not brown.
Not brown.
Not many, not many people say brown, to be honest. That's not really a go-to colour for many people. No. And the last question we're asking people is, what have you discovered since we've been in quarantine? What is your hidden lockdown talent? Anything that you've discovered that you didn't know you could do because you've had all this time?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm useless at is snakes and ladders. And I know it's a game of luck, but we've had about 9 games so far. I've won one, and all the others have won. I think we've played 10 games. They've won 3 each. I've won 1. And much to my children's delight when I go down a snake, I just seem to be... I've never known I was crap at that. But it's a game of fortune, and it's a game that I'm not very good at. I'm very good at jigsaw puzzles.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of jigsaw puzzles.
So what's your image at the moment?
I love jigsaw puzzles. Yeah. A jigsaw at the moment is an album theme of Don't Shoot Me, I'm Only the Piano Player. So, and that's hard because there's a lot of dark colours in that one. There's a Yellow Brick Road one as well. And there's a Captain Fantastic one, which would be very hard. But at the moment, Don't Shoot Me is really difficult. So jigsaw puzzles. But you know what? It's so great because the kid is really good at jigsaw puzzles. And I love them. So that's the sort of thing we've been doing. Snakes and ladders, jigsaw puzzles, lots of card games, Uno. My talent for jigsaw puzzles has re-emerged because I did them a lot when I was a kid. And that's a talent I've rediscovered since I've been in isolation.
Amazing. Well, I think a lot of people are. I've rediscovered Rummy Cub. Me and my boyfriend have been sitting playing that and I've been thrashing him gleefully.
Really? Oh, you've been thrashing him?
Yes. I've got very strong hands.
I've been catching up with so many TV series that I haven't seen. Like, I haven't seen Fleabag, and of course...
Oh, my God, yeah.
Well, I had seen it, but I'd forgotten how good it was, so we redid it. And, that was just, and I'm now watching Pose, which I'm incredibly...
We just interviewed Billy Porter. We just interviewed him. Yeah.
He's amazing.
God.
I love him so much. I love the program so much.
It's so important, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's great. It's just, because I'm on the road so much that when they say, oh, watch an episode of this, and I think, well, I'm not going to watch an episode because... I'll lose it. I won't see the next one.
Yeah.
So there's lots of stuff to catch up with, which has all been so great. So
years and years. You've got to watch Years and Years.
I haven't watched Years and Years. Is that a good one?
Yeah, I'm in it.
Yeah, Russell's in it.
Oh, you're in it. Then I'll watch it immediately. Right.
Yeah.
It was written,
turn off Fleabag,
by Russell
watch
T. Davis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Russell T. Davis
wrote it. And we're watching that every night now. So we've done 3 of those. So that's our nightly thing until that finishes, and then we watch Years and Years.
Yeah, there you go. Let me know what you think.
There you go.
Amazing. Amazing.
Are you naked in it, Russell?
I am in parts of it, yeah. Will that help you watch it more?
Then we will watch it tonight, then.
And there's also gay kissing in it, the gay kissing scenes.
Oh, really? Okay.
Russell has a
voice. And there's more gay stuff. Yeah. Say again. Yeah?
That's it. Thanks to you guys for asking me to do this. It's been
oh my God!
A while
thank you so much.
It together, but now that because of this has all happened, I can actually sit down and do it. So
it's amazing.
You.
Oh, it's amazing!
It's so amazing.
It's been so
to have
wonderful
you on.
To
thank you.
Hear you speak. Just as a final thing, can you tell me which is better, analog or digital? Because I've heard you talk about this before, and I love
analog. Analog.
Yeah.
I'm an analog. You know, a lot of people disagree with me. It's up to you. You know, the digital is so great, but for me, something on analog. You play a pressing of Aretha Franklin, Greatest Hits, on a record, and then you listen to it on a CD. It's a different ballgame. Any album, Beatles album, my album, if it's a good pressing, it'll be digital any day of the week. But having said that, digital is also a great medium of listening to things. But it makes you lazy. It makes you lazy because you know, when you record an album on analog, the editing takes quite some time if you want to do an edit. But the sound of it is warmer. And talk to Neil Young. He'll give you an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, indeed.
He'll be very opinionated on it. I do prefer analog. But then I'm a Luddite. So, I'm a total Luddite. I'm a technophobe. I'm no good at technology. So I would say that. But a lot of people would say, oh, he's full of shit.
I think it's great that cameras are back as well, photography cameras. I feel like more and more people are like using Polaroids again. Yeah. And then also vinyl records and like Rough Trade and all these record shops that are
That's my record store, Rough Trade, Lambert Grove. And,
love it there.
Look through the wrap. Yeah. I could do that all day. The people in there are amazing. Chris, who looks after me, is fantastic. We have an email relationship. When I'm away, he emails me the new releases every week. I choose them. And then someone goes and picks my vinyl up for me. I love it, I love it, I love it. Long may those places exist, because they, for me, it's like going to a beautiful church.
Yes.
Wow. Well, on that note, agreed. Thank you so much.
Well, on that note, thank you so much, Elton. It's been a privilege to speak with you.
And listen, stay safe, all right?
Yes, definitely. For all images we've been talking about today, please listen to our Instagram at TallCar. And Elton, you're on Instagram, aren't you?
It's at Elton John.
Okay, there we go. That's pretty,
it's at Elton John. And also, Elton, happy birthday, because it was your birthday this week.
Oh, thank you, last week. Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank
you, guys. Happy birthday.
And lots of love, Elton.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diament and Russell Tovey. Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in this episode. Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.